Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. The show is brought to you by EMP180 Weight Loss, the standard for weight loss in the D.C. area. It's EMP180weightloss.com. We're going to talk some Redskins right now. Fill you in. Look, free agency has been crazy. Can't remember the day that officially started, but a lot of it happened before it officially started.
Well, during it was the 14th, right? Was it like that Wednesday,
yeah,
I think?
March 14th. Like, yeah. It's been just a flurry of activity in the NFL, and the Redskins haven't been involved in that much. Made their presser with Alex Smith and Paul Richardson, but it's been a pretty quiet, I would say, free agency period for the Redskins, but now apparently they are talking to a few defensive players.
Well, Jonathan Hankins, and John, as soon as we get John on, he'll know all about him because he's an Ohio State guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Hankins is only 25, 26, Ohio State stud, former second-round pick out of Ohio State. And really, sounds like the only reason why the Colts are letting him go is because they're switching from a 4-3
he doesn't fit,
to a 3-4.
Huh?
He doesn't fit, but we run a 3-4, but he's so good. They find a place for him.
That doesn't make any sense. So why wouldn't the Colts find a place for him?
Well, I think he's also due about
$9 million a year.
They just got a bunch of draft picks, and they're going to draft a bunch of defensive players.
Well, I get it, but he's 25. It's not like he's 35.
I know.
Right. All right, well, John can answer this for us. John Keim, of course, from ESPN.com. John, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing great. Well. So let's just start off right away with this Hankins guy. I'm intrigued. I assume you know a lot about him. I know you're a big Ohio State guy. And 25, 26 years old, he had just signed a $27 million deal. And from what I'm reading, was a guy really the only really why they're moving on beyond the high salaries that they're switching from a 4-3 to a 3-4. Well, we run a 3-4, but is he just so good?
Well, they're switching to a different type of 4-3. So they're still running a 4-3.
Okay.
But what they want are defensive tackles who are a little bit smaller and quicker.
Okay.
So it's just a different style of a 4-3. People I've talked to over there said that, yeah, he did play well, and it was as, I don't want to say as simple as that, because it was a way that they could, you know, if you don't want to pay a guy like him that much money, well, they could cut him, and there's no penalty because of the way his contract was structured. But, yeah, it was because it was a different style of a 4-3.
Gotcha. And then what
good football players are still hard to come by.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm surprised that they're...
Oh, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. But if you're... But again, if you want a guy who's maybe instead of 340, 330, you want guys who are 300, he's not going to fit. And so then he does become an expensive guy for you. Now, listen, if it's Aaron Donald, you're not going to cut Aaron Donald. You know, it does sound like a scheme fit thing, because it does sound like he was actually productive last year. And he was productive with the Giants as well in a 4-3. So he is a guy that, I mean, obviously there's an Ohio State thing, but I always liked him when he was at the Giants too, because I thought he was a good player for them, surrounded by good talent. But yeah, I agree with you. If you're that good, you're going to stick around. But I think they just viewed him as having a skill set that didn't match what they wanted to do, and he was inexpensive.
Hmm. So if they go after a Hankins, does that take them out of the mix for a guy like a Vita Vea in the draft at 13? If Hankins signs, hypothetically, what direction do you see them going with the draft pick? Do they trade out of it and try to accumulate more picks? Do they stay pat at 13? What do you think happens there?
That's a good question. I was trying to figure that out yesterday a little bit, because they've already solved inside linebacker by bringing back Zach Brown. So you don't need to get a Roquan Smith or someone like that. If they get one of these corners, do you then draft one of the corners there, whether it's Denzel Ward, Josh Jackson, one of those guys, if you get, like, say, Orlando Scandrick, or if Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie comes, do you feel that need to, you know, not even so much a need, but would you go in that direction? I know running back is still clearly a priority for them, and left guard. They need to find a left guard somehow, and there's really now there aren't a lot of good options in free agency. They might bring back Sean Laval, but it's also a spot where you could probably address that, not necessarily at 13, unless Quentin Nelson somehow falls. So my thing would be you could see a trade back. Now, every year we hear teams want to trade back. Every year you hear that with almost every team. And so it's hard to do, but I think that would be, if you want a running back, 13 might be a little bit too high, but if you can trade back several spots, then you can get another pick. Maybe you can get a Darius Geis there and feel more comfortable with that.
Tell us about the other guys that they're bringing in. Scandrick, who else?
Pernell McPhee.
First thing is all three of these guys have been cut by their previous team. So for those worrying about the compensatory picks, it would not count against that. But McPhee and Scandrick both have durability / health issues over the last several years. So, you know, you can get guys who have had success in the past, but there's the durability concern. McPhee would be a pass rusher on the outside. Again, productive when healthy, it seemed, but healthy was a problem, and has some versatility. Was with the Ravens, if you remember, got the big deal with the Bears. When he was with the Ravens, he played kind of a role where you do use like a Trent Murphy or Preston Smith at times, where outside at, you know, big guy, 275 pounds, could play him outside in a 3-4, rush him there, or you could move him inside in certain packages. And then Scandrick would help them fill that slot corner position. And again, he was good when he was healthy, but he's had trouble staying healthy over the years. So the last couple of years, so that's the one knock there. But those are the roles those guys would fill. McPhee, you know, they're clearly looking for that backup pass rusher with Murphy gone, and then Junior Gallette still on the market.
John, I saw in your article that Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie is looking to wait until April to make his decision as to where he's going to sign. Why is he going to take like 10 days to make that decision?
That's a good question. And Josina Anderson reported that. All I know is that he's going to wait that long, that he had told her that he was going to wait that long. Sometimes things get pushed a little bit. Your timetables change based on certain things. It could be you just waiting to see how other things fall out. I don't know, because as you see, guys start to get released around this time as teams start to sign players. So it may be that he wants to help. Maybe he's hoping that he can increase his market by waiting another week or two as teams release more guys.
Are we getting into, with some of these guys, are we getting into to like Terrell McLean, Stacy McGee territory? We're bringing in guys. We're going to give them a deal. They're free agents, but don't expect too much.
You know, well, don't forget those guys were signed early in free agency. So, you know, that was a, interesting, the guys that the, you know, the last few years, they've gotten guys like a Josh Norman later. Zach Brown was a little bit later, mm-hmm. but he was later, not because he was released or anything like that, but because his market didn't develop the way he wanted. Deshaun Jackson was later. So I think there's always that secondary market on free agency, and we're entering that phase where it's guys who have been released or guys who you may be more bargain shopping. And I think that's what they're looking for, bargains. And I think Hankins is in a different category because he was just released. If he had been on the market, he's a guy they go after because of his age and what he can do. But the other ones, Scandrick, McPhee, I think guys like that, you're trying to find a good veteran who's at a bargain price.
They knew who they were going to lose, right? Like most of them. I don't know that they necessarily thought they were going to lose Trent Murphy, but they knew they were ready. A year ago, they decided Niles Paul was his last year. Spencer Long was his last year. Bashaud Breeland was his last year. I think the ones that maybe surprised them a little, not that his death, you know, was Ryan Grant, Trent Murphy, right?
Yeah, because I know, like with Trent, Trent they wanted to bring back, but you're not going to pay $7 per year for a backup linebacker, which is essentially what he is for them, and they just had drafted Ryan Anderson as well. And so, you know, they need to see him develop, and he definitely needs to develop as a pass rusher, but so did Trent Murphy after his first 2 years. Murphy still had to develop. And same with Ryan Grant. I mean, we know how much, not just Jay Gruden, but I know how much Ike Hilliard loves the guy. But at that cost, which what he got from Baltimore initially before the whole physical whatever, that was just way too much that they're going to pay for him. So, yeah, I think those are the ones at the end of the year I thought, okay, there's a good chance. And same with Zach Brown. You knew that they had already made the offer to him and that they wanted him back just at the price point. But, you know, I knew that of those free agents, that the two guys that they liked the most were Trent Murphy and Ryan Grant.
Where does this leave now? What's the latest? Maybe I missed it overnight. What's the latest with Junior Gallette? I would assume this improves his chances of coming back.
Well, it depends what happens with McPhee, because if they sign him, now you have four outside linebackers. And depending on what they – listen, I don't know – you know, all I know is that McPhee is coming in. I don't know, like, what role they would envision for him as opposed to someone else. But that would give them four outside linebackers with Anderson. So, if you're Junior Gallette, do you want to come back in a spot where you have – you know, he wants more chances. Now you're having another guy in the mix there. I know that there was an offer made to him. I know he was frustrated with the offer. And so, you know, where it stands, I don't know. I don't think the market is quite developed for him the way that he had hoped. But, you know, he is 30 years old, and teams will always use whatever they can against you to get the price down. And for him, it's going to be, you know, his past and his age. And I thought he was a good pass rusher. I thought he put some good rushes this year. Probably more of a situational guy at this point, but he still was effective last year. And so I think he'll obviously end up somewhere, and it wouldn't surprise me if he comes back here. I know this is where he wants to be, and so it could still happen. I don't know, like, if McPhee signs here, that he'd want to come back here, just because, again, now you already have four guys in the mix, and he's trying to get as much as he can.
Talking Redskins with John Keim, who covers the Redskins for ESPN and ESPN.com. I know Doug Williams has said they're going to address the situation at running back, very unhappy with the production.
Oh, he has said that a number of times, too.
Yeah, he says it over and over, but I'm just wondering, is anybody left in free agency to address the situation?
No, and it is funny, because if you ask Doug, how was your lunch today? My lunch was great. I promise you we're going to find a running back. So he is dropping that line a few times. So the draft is really good. Excuse me. The draft is really good for running backs. And I think that's where they'll go. I know, and talked to some people, you know, a week or two ago, that there were some free agents they liked, but the fear was having to pay $5 or $6 million a year for a guy who's already, you know, who's been in the league for 4 or 5 years, when you can get maybe a comparable talent level for a lot cheaper in the draft. And I think we've seen that guys can come in and make an impact. So it's a good draft. The fear is, and this is why I talked about trading back, between they pick 13 and 44. That might be between the sweet spot of the guys you really like, you know, and there's a handful of guys there, but there's a, you know, would there be a run on running backs once Geis goes? Are there going to be other teams that are going to now look to get guys? I don't know, but that would be a fear. But I think that's where I think the draft has always been a thing, and I think the fact that they didn't really go hard after it in free agency suggests that there are a number of guys in the draft that they like and feel like they have a good chance at landing.
So what are your thoughts on – so Rodgers Cromartie was in town last weekend, didn't sign, and then now Skandrick is someone they're going to bring in. What are your thoughts on those two guys? I was a little surprised that they were in on Cromartie just because of his age, but I don't know, maybe he can still play a little bit.
Yeah, I was a little bit too – excuse me, he can fill a role with the covering in the slot. He's also has some versatility, you know, and he did a pretty good job in the slot for the Giants at times. So I don't know that he's ever been considered a physical outside corner, which they might want, but I don't think that would be his role anyways. Clearly, he hasn't received the offer he was hoping for because he's still unsigned. I don't think he's waiting till April if he finds a really good offer now. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's some sort of a very, very small deal for Washington. Just because of his age, you don't want to invest too much there. And I think that's why they've been reluctant to bring in some older guys. And the same with in Skandrick, again, you know, he basically rose up as a slot corner. So that would be his role here as well. But the number one issue for him would be the durability. That's it. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to pay a ton for, you're certainly not going to pay a ton for him. Because he would be a backup slash slot corner. So they have that role that they need to fill. And I think here's the other thing. I wouldn't give him a big deal because what if you see Josh Holsey's developing in there and now you're tied to a 30-year-old guy for 3 years? Well, I just don't see that happening. You know, I think this would be insurance in case Holsey or Moreau or someone else can't play inside. But it certainly gives them the ability to develop further while maybe, you know, getting some productive play out of a veteran for a year.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate it as always.
All right, guys.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Talk to you soon.
John Keim giving us the skinny. I hope they get the Hankins. I feel like that would be a good sign.
I would think so.
Relatively young guys, been productive.
Now, these other guys, McPhee and Skandrick, not interested.
I think the Colts were due to pay him like a $4.5 million bonus if he was on the roster as of this Sunday, and they said you're finished.
Yeah.
Don't want to pay
Dude,
you
he's
that
like
money.
25,
at all.
26 years
I know,
old.
Young, yeah. Young second
round
pick.
A 25-year-old who's been productive.
Yeah, Ohio State, Tully. Yeah,
exactly. Nice. All right, let's talk about a 5-hour energy. If you're drained from watching all the upsets this past weekend, maybe you're dragging because you're up past your bedtime watching West Virginia pound Marshall. Maybe you need a pick-me-up to feel alert and focused today on a Monday. Get yourself a 5-Hour Energy on your way to work. Right now, 5-Hour Energy is launching their Getting Back to 100% campaign with a unique twist on this year's College Hoops Tournament. You've got the ability to swap out your incorrect selections on the brackets during the tournament as the game is being played. You see an upset in the making? No big deal. All you got to do is swap the favorite out to ensure that your bracket is 100% correct. That's right, all up until 4 minutes left in the game. You can swap out your teams. Just go to 5hourenergybrackets.com or click on the link on the fandc.com's homepage. That's 5hourenergybrackets.com or click on the link on the fandc.com's homepage.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So we just talked to John Keim from ESPN.com about the Redskins and free agency. And there was a story that came out on Friday or Saturday about how the Alex Smith trade came about. And we heard Doug Williams before the press conference say that all the personnel people, they got together and they thought Alex Smith was the guy, and all the coaches got together and they thought Alex Smith was the guy, and then they came together and they decided on
that. As a group, they came together, right?
But there was a story that apparently Bruce Allen called Doug Williams the night before they made the deal, and Doug didn't know what was going on, and he said, "Don't answer your phone.
I'll talk, be here."
Didn't share what he was talking about with Doug Williams, according to that story, which further shows what we've all discussed, that Doug Williams essentially is kind of out of the loop when it comes
Although,
to the big decisions.
Dan later deleted that.
Right.
And it makes you wonder, well, is that because the Redskins read that and it makes it look
Dan
bad?
Meaning Dan Steinberg?
Correct. And so now it makes
Not
it.
Not Dan Snyder.
Correct. So, you know, Dan was like, "Oh, I'm retracting that. I didn't have the full story," which leads you to believe the Redskins saw that, didn't like the perception of that, and now they're, you know, changing at least.
Well, which one do you believe?
I believe the initial report.
Yeah, so do I.
But you know,
is anybody
knows?
Surprised that Doug Williams kind of left out in the dark on a big
not.
Acquisition like this?
No,
I wouldn't be.
Now, two
not.
Things can happen that Doug Williams could have been left out, but he could have been part of the decision making that this is the guy that we're going after.
Correct. Look, I'm sure they talked with. Look, Doug Williams knew that they were in play for Alex Smith before the trade was made. But maybe Bruce Allen just, you know, made the deal without Doug Williams knowing it, and that's why he said, don't answer your phone, be here at 7 a.m. the next morning, and we'll talk about it, and that's when he found out they actually made the trade. But I can't believe that Doug Williams didn't know that they were talking about making the deal. I don't believe that.
I'm sure.
But I don't think Doug Williams was the one guy that said, this is the deal we got to make, let's make it happen, whatever you have to do, make the trade happen. I don't think that's what happened at all.
No. He's not the one pulling the strings. I'm sure he's involved on some level.
Yeah, I'm sure he knew about it.
Yeah, he knew it was a possibility.
He just didn't know it went down until the next day.
And I think, well, if you read the way it read in the article in the area that Dan Steinberg tweeted, it read that, you know, he didn't know exactly what was going to happen. He was going to wake up in the morning to see what it was. He couldn't wait to see it open like his Christmas present.
Right.
What he had. Now, he probably knew what they were shopping for. But he didn't know which one they purchased.
Why wouldn't Bruce just tell him? And by the way, the natural would be if he said, don't answer your phone, you naturally would say, why?
Well, because he said, don't answer your phone, I'll talk to you in the morning. I'll see you at 7 a.m. You know, it's just a manipulative, passive-aggressive
move. But we don't know what the response was. Maybe he did say something like that. It just wasn't answered.
Well, it sounded like, but if you read it, then
he
was just
afraid that Doug was going to leak it to the media first.
I don't know, but it sounded
like
if you read
the downside of telling
keeping it super secret, you don't want anybody to know. Even Doug Williams keeping him in the dark until the news actually comes out. Look, if anybody thought that Bruce Allen wasn't still in charge, you're foolish.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, I don't even think it's a big story because everyone kind of knew Bruce Allen's still making the calls.
Right.
No one in their right mind thought that Doug Williams made that call without Bruce Allen, his input anyway. No one would think that. But why is it a huge story? I don't know. You tell me.
Because it's different than what they portray.
You mean the Liars?
Correct.
Yeah.
North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
A.K.A. the Redskins.
I get it.
Everyone knows with half a brain who's pulling the strings over there. I don't have any doubt that Doug is involved, but he's not making the final call. Not even close.
He's an opinion. He's an opinion in the room.
He's an opinion that they value.
Yeah. And he is the mouthpiece. He's the guy because
he's
likable.
And he's the guy, right, that people
like. We all
like
him. Everybody likes him. Respects him.
He's a Redskins icon.
Exactly.
He's
the guy that they're going to put on the podium to introduce Alex Smith, right, to introduce Paul Richardson.
Mm-hmm. He's their bulletproof vest.
He's the guy who will say.
He's Kevlar.
We know that we suck at running back. We're gonna address it.
He takes the bullets.
What did you think about the press conference with Alex Smith? When was
awesome.
That on?
Yeah, you weren't here on Thursday.
That was
or Friday.
On Thursday, right?
Yeah. It was awesome. First of all, he's dreamy.
I saw a little bit of it.
And here's the thing. And again, I'm over the eight era. God bless him. Wish him well. Tip my cap. Mm-hmm. But I got no Eddie Haskell vibe from Alex Smith. He's not trying to win you over and say the right things. He just, you know, I thought he was honest, classy. I just liked it. I didn't think he was BSing.
Hot wife.
I thought he was genuine.
Shocker, he went to the Palm for dinner that night.
Not really surprising at all. Hopefully, he saw the Junk's caricature right when he walked in.
And by the way, just to wrap up the Cousins era, so I want people to understand this because I was actually thinking about this as I was driving around town because I know there are guys. I know Grant, for example, is just so infuriated that I have this opinion that I thought Kirk was a little disingenuous. Overall, Kirk handled himself. I give him an A. I mean, he handled himself great. Just saying, that's one. You know, his agent did an interview. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, where he talked about for 3 years they've been counting down the days to be a free agent,
mm-hmm.
And I get it. And Kirk said it often, but what he also said was that he'd love to find a way to stay here in Washington, be a Washington Redskin.
He really didn't want that.
He couldn't wait to get out of here. And that's all. And I get it. It's a difficult position. What else do you say? Overall, Kirk Cousins, the way he handled himself, very classy. I give him an A, maybe an A minus. But I'm just making out a small observation. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. Just a small observation. He was a little disingenuous to fans to give you a little false hope that there was a chance he would stay here long term. It was never in the cards. And a lot of it had nothing to do with him. Redskins didn't want to commit $90 million. over 3 years, guaranteed. The Jets were going to. The Jets offered him 3 years guaranteed, 90. He took 84 from the Vikings. So I will give him that.
Well, what was the overall
but that even
guaranteed
probably
money
goes
on
down
Alex
to
Smith.
Money, by the way, because of the taxes, the situation in both states.
The like, offsetting actually, taxes.
If you look at the tax
correct.
Situation living in New York City
but I'm
versus
take him,
Minnesota.
I'm going to take him at face value that he decided it would take a little less because there's a more competitive team.
It might be a little less.
Yeah.
It also might be more.
The Alex Smith money, they offered Alex Smith more than they did Kirk.
Yeah.
Look, it was they weren't wanted on both sides. And you can even
right, so
say,
it goes beyond the money. They just didn't want him.
They didn't want him for that tag, for sure. They wanted him controllable, under their terms. And he knew, and his agent knew, that they were in a unique spot. So listen, I tip my cap to him. I appreciate what he did here in D.C. I think he's a classy, good guy. I'm just saying, and I think it's okay. You can be, not everyone's perfect. He was a little disingenuous, giving fans this idea that he wanted to ever really retire as a Redskin. He didn't like Bruce. Didn't trust him. Maybe he liked Dan. I don't know. And I don't blame him. Who likes or trusts Bruce?
He
no,
made
Bruce
the right.
Is the devil.
He made the right career move.
He
of
did.
Course he did.
He absolutely did.
But
did.
I agree with TB. Said it all along. Very Eddie Haskell-ish.
He is a little
and
a bit
of
Eddie Haskell.
And we had a little fun with the RG3 play. Okay, fine. He has his hands behind. I get it.
Six we're just having
whatever.
Fun with that. But
right.
I think it's a little bit indicative.
He was a big phony for 3 years saying he wanted to be with the Redskins.
Yeah.
And for Redskins fans, which I'm not.
Here.
See, I never
he
bought into
diplomatic.
It.
You guys
I never bought into it.
I'm not
being
diplomatic. Pakes, overall, I gave him an A. The way he, right, you hear what I said? Classy.
I heard what you said.
He handled himself.
Every third word out of your mouth for him is he's being a big phony.
Disingenuous.
A little disingenuous. That's all. That one aspect.
When he said that he wanted to work
aspect.
With Josh
he's
Doctson
not a perfect
guy. For years, please. Never bought into any of that stuff.
Yeah. I think it took him about.
Up.
I think it took him about one duty break to get over the Redskins trading for Alex Smith.
Oh, please!
You know what I mean?
But
yeah,
back
trade for Alex. Let me go poop.
But
okay,
back
I'm
to
good.
The Bruce Allen thing.
Because I know I'm going to make about $90 million guaranteed
yeah.
somewhere.
This kind of reaffirms though what we knew that Bruce Allen is still pulling the strings. He is running the show. What I think though could happen is if Kirk does play really well, and it doesn't work out with Alex Smith, we've always said. What's it going to take for Bruce Allen to lose his job? If this thing doesn't work out because of the botched negotiations, moving on with Alex Smith, that could be his death knell. Now, I think it actually is going to work out with Alex Smith.
I actually think it's going to work out with Alex
meaning
Smith.
Meaning what? He's just going to put up good
He'll
numbers?
He'll play as well
He'll
as
be
Kirk
very
did.
Solid. We're not going to focus and obsess on the quarterback position. I could, you know what? Cue this up and mock
of
me.
Of course we
mock
will.
Mock me in September. I already know it.
When he has 25 completions for 170
yeah,
yards.
He's, check
I don't
out
believe
Charlie.
That's going to happen. Here's what I think they've done with Alex
with 12
Smith.
12 passes to Chris Thompson.
You've got a very competent pro, and I just think it's going to kind of take that position out of the equation a little bit, as much as you can, you know, being the most important position on the field. I think the questions will not. You know what you're going to get from him. Very solid performances. Now you're gonna. You need to tweak the other pieces. Now that's what I think.
Yeah,
and
but
that's,
we, but
that's
we also
what we'll obsess
knew,
on.
We also knew what we were gonna get from Kirk.
Generally,
and you still, he was still the number one,
right.
You know, conversation.
Topic. Well, you could always make
on
the
a
argument.
Monday morning,
you can always make the argument that in DC, that's always the case.
Yeah.
So that's why
so
I say.
Think,
that's
yeah.
why you can say you can mock me.
I was gonna say. Well, I'm not mocking you. I just think that it's absolutely gonna be a topic.
It will be because you're going to want to see a referendum on making sure that he's at least as good as Kirk. So we will be checking, not even to say as Kirk in Minnesota, but to say, okay, is he putting up Cousins-like numbers of the last 3 years?
But you're right. I mean, it does go beyond his specific numbers because other aspects of the team have to get better.
I just think he's going to be very solid.
I'm sure he will, too.
I really
He's
do.
A very solid quarterback.
And he might make a few less mistakes than Kirk.
But you just never know when a guy goes to a whole different
You're right.
organization with different players, different
now,
schemes.
And by the way, that was my argument for Kirk to stay here.
This is you the second organization that looked at Alex Smith and said, you know what? We're going to go with a younger guy. We're going to go with a different guy. Did it with Colin Kaepernick. Now doing it with Patrick Mahomes. I'd be a little bit worried about that. Second
well,
organization,
teams,
just say
those teams could never get over the hump.
You've done okay, but we're ready to move on from you. There, I'd be a little bit worried about
well,
that.
With
if
the,
you're a Skins fan,
with the,
I'm not
with
because
the
you
San
know
Francisco
what you're getting.
Situation. He got hurt, and Kaepernick took over, and then Kaepernick was so good, he took off, and he added a whole new dimension with the running that they kind of had to stay with it.
And remember, it looked like that was the new breed, that was going to be the new way. We had him and Wilson and RG3.
But in Kansas City, they never won playoff games.
Yeah.
I mean, he put up fine numbers.
The big knock on Kirk was
never won playoff
games. Kirk didn't win the playoff game against Green Bay. Well, I believe Alex Smith's record in the playoffs is 2-5.
Takes is so vested in
just,
Kirk Cousins.
I'm not that vested. I'm just telling you, don't get super excited about Alex Smith.
You're definitely rooting for Kirk Cousins more than you are Derek Carr.
Clearly. I want Kirk. I've gone on record saying I want Kirk to hoist the Lombardi Trophy this season.
If Kirk Cousins,
I'm giddy if that happens.
If he hoists the Lombardi Trophy, I'm gonna vomit. Yeah, vomit. Maybe I would do that.
You'll
on
be
air.
Upset.
Maybe I'd put my finger down my throat, and I've never
forced
done,
vomit.
Yeah, I've never done that.
It's better than the breeze thing.
I can't bet my head in a toilet with duty swirling.
You can't
again.
Do that.
That one was scary.
But making yourself puke.
I've
it's
never
a good
done
radio
that.
Radio bit.
I know JP does that when he drank too much.
Yeah,
I can't do that.
I wanted to do it after I ate the 15 hot dogs, but I couldn't.
Right.
I just couldn't do it.
All right, coming up at 8:20, we'll get back to the NCAA tournament. Jerry Palm, bracketology expert, joins us here on the Junkie. Welcome back, Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We opened this show talking about the tournament. We're going to have Jerry Palm coming up at 8:20 to get into it. It is amazing. You look at the South, Kentucky, being a 5 seed, being the highest seed in that bracket.
It's crazy.
With a 7-9-11.
1, 2, 3, and 4 gone before the regional semis. Nobody would have thought that. Nobody.
And there were some great games, buzzer beaters. I saw the Michigan buzzer beater live, and it was late. It was late. I let my son stay up to watch it. We were like hooting and hollering. It was awesome.
It was a great game. I think it was like a 9:40 start.
Every coach always gets criticized when the buzzer beater happens when nobody's defending the inbounds guy. Like, you would think that just every time you would find some sort of 7-footer, be the last guy on your bench, and all he does is just kind of block the inbounds passer.
Well,
because
I mean,
he had a clean pass to about half court, the guy took about 3 or 4 dribbles, passed, and then you see the game-winning.
Well, they tried to double him. They did a poor job of it because he was still able to make the pass clean, but with 3 seconds on the clock, I just don't understand why you don't take a long, athletic kid and put him on the ball and make that pass to be as difficult as possible to make. And remember, when without putting a guy on the ball, you can make that pass, and the guy catching it can be moving towards the basket.
Yep.
So his momentum was kind of going towards Houston's basket. And, you know, 3 seconds, when you catch the ball at half court, 3 seconds is a long time. You can make an extra pass, and you can get a clean look, which they did, and that's going to be a tough one for Kelvin Sampson to swallow, man, for a long time. And then Mick Cronin at Cincinnati, I mean, I don't even know how you get over losing a 22-point lead with 10 minutes to play.
Like it's almost physically impossible to gag away that sort of lead.
It really
does. Little time left on the clock.
Think about this. They're up 65-43 with 11 minutes to play in the game, and they're outscored 31-8 or 32-8, whatever it was. I mean, you can't sleep for weeks after losing a game like that.
I think Valdezzi was all over Nevada as a dark horse, as a 7 seed.
That was good.
How about UVA, though? Coach Bennett, who's been great, and we talked about this at the top of the show, there are definitely people wondering, can he ever get to a Final Four? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, each year is different, but
with the current system, with the low-scoring team.
Obviously, based on the way his team plays, it's very difficult, because if you run into, and we saw it against Virginia Tech in the regular season, if you run into a hot shooting team and you're not shooting the ball well, which they didn't, you're going to lose.
So is he going to have to change the way that he coaches and recruits? See, I just think it's a matter of time. Like, I'm buying into, I guess Seth Davis on CBS had said he believes Bennett's the best coach in the country. Okay, he said that right before that game, and then, of course, everybody starts coming at him on social media, and he pointed out, look, a lot of people said Phil Mickelson couldn't win a major, that Coach K couldn't win a national championship because it took him several years. And he pointed out several other examples. And I pointed out early in the show that, you know, when Gary Williams was taken to the Terps to the tournament year after year after year, after a while we were like, why can't they get to a Final Four? And then he did, and he won a national championship. So I believe they have to exercise patience, because you have a really good team. They've been to 1 Elite 8.
Yeah. It's so hard to win national championships.
Bounced out a lot.
It's hard to win national championships.
But they are underperforming in the tournament.
Now, it shouldn't be hard.
That's what was happening.
It shouldn't be hard to beat a 16 seed.
Now, that's what was happening with JT3 at Georgetown, too. that he had a run before the last 2 years, which were terrible. Mm-hmm. He had a run of getting to the tournament consistently, and I think they made one Final Four.
He got to the Final Four, yeah. But when you get outscored by 25 points behind the arc, I mean, more than likely you're going to lose that game. I don't care if it's a 16 seed or if you're playing another one seed. Is he going to change the way he coaches? It's kind of hard to do that. Maybe you can change the way you recruit a little bit and acquire more offensive guys and push pace, but that's the way he coaches. That's the way he's learned.
I think he can have an odd year where he gets through a tournament, but I do think this style does limit their chances.
If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. First time in the history of the tournament that a one seed, and they were the one overall.
1-1.
Yeah.
Loses to a 16 seed. They lose to UMBC. And you just wonder if you're a Virginia alum. One of our buddies, Dr. Shin, sent me a text because he went to UVA, and he's like, he goes, I'm done. He goes, Chaminade, and now this. I'm done.
Right.
He's like, I'm done getting my hopes up. But I'm of the thought that Coach Bennett, the team was good enough. Like, people will say that the system's not good enough, right? System's not good enough. You're not going to be able to get through the tournament.
It's not that
but
the system's...
they just got through the ACC tournament against Duke and North Carolina.
It's not that the system's not good enough. It's just that it leaves you vulnerable.
Right, less margin for error.
And it's the nature of the game, too, right? In the tournament, you just get teams that are hot from outside. Everyone's vulnerable, though. Everybody, no matter what style of play. That's why Pomeroy tweeted, no matter what team gets to the Final Four, they're overachieving because the odds are against
them.
Because
it's so hard, yeah.
It's just so hard. And some teams that do traditionally have more success, but they tend to have, A, the better players, and they just proven track records, better coaching.
But I know I did Wizards Overtime on Saturday night with Walt Williams. And Walt's kind of that belief that UVA is just never going to be able to get through the tournament.
Because
based
of
on
their
the
style.
Way that they play.
I tend to agree, but I think there's an odd year they can.
And I was like, but they won the ACC regular season. And then they win the ACC tournament against these top teams. I mean, there's four ACC teams left in the Sweet 16. They were the best team in the ACC.
I don't know. It's tough to say a team can never get through a tournament. I mean, it's just you have no idea from year to year. I mean, things just are so different from year to year in the brackets. But when Virginia is one or two in defensive efficiency all year long, and they allow teams to shoot maybe 36%, 37%, I'm guessing on the number, not very far from that. And then the team shoots 55% in the tournament. Look, there's a reason why they lost the game.
Now, the game was tied at the half.
Yeah.
So in the second half.
But they just let UMBC hang around.
Right.
They let them hang
and
around.
And the crowd gets behind.
Crowd got into it. They got more confident.
I went to bed.
Lyles didn't miss.
I went to bed.
I mean, what did Lyles have, 30 in the game or 25?
I wasn't even paying attention until my kid walked around the corner and says, we have to watch a UMBC game. They're beating Virginia. I was like, because that with
you
a 1-16,
5 minutes in.
No, with a 1-16, I was like, the right. Ones always win. What's the point of even watching? Even though there's a somewhat local connection.
And that game started late.
Yeah, it was late. So went down and watched like the last 20 minutes, and they were dominating. Dude,
my
them.
Brother, who's a UMBC grad, my brother Chet, they was going nuts. It was the biggest thing. I mean. 25 years, I never seen pride. I mean, all of a sudden, I forgot.
Now he's gonna start putting his UMBC sweatshirts on.
The whole family's watching the game. I mean, they're going crazy.
You can't slide in you made a bad choice jokes. Well, for one day,
did you see somebody had a tweet or a sign? They called it what is it?
University
of Maryland Backup College.
Yeah, that's what Walt called it on Saturday night.
University of Catonsville, left of Arbutus.
Right.
No, somebody called it Backup Choice. Yeah. University of Maryland Backup Choice.
Backup Choice, Backup Campus, whatever you want to go with.
So many nicknames for UMBC.
Hey, God bless him. You think about it. Now, listen, here's the thing. They're probably going to lose Odom now, right? This is what sucks about it.
Probably.
Because he'll go on. But can you imagine recruiting advantage? If he actually stayed, that they would have.
Yeah.
I mean, they would just go to that next level.
And it'll have the effect of Larinaga making the Final Four at George Mason, and where like, the university became bigger and popular.
As I was driving this morning, they said that they had 5,000 followers on Twitter before the game. After the game, they had 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I mean, that's silly, but it's just one anecdote that shows you their profile through the roof now.
Oh, yeah. Enrollment will
but
probably go
But they won't
up.
Be able to capitalize on it because they're going to lose the staff.
Meanwhile, we're
they're
looking
going
at
to lose the staff.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just a very slow
It's
going
to be hard to repeat that. But just when you witness something like that, and you're always going to remember where you were, and it's one of the biggest upsets, not just college basketball history, in sports history.
Yeah.
Just is.
where I was. I was in bed.
Why did you go to bed, Rick? That's tilty.
Honestly, Friday night, I was exhausted. I don't know. I was just exhausted. Well, I didn't let myself get sucked in.
Well,
and I
watched you'll remember that you were in bed.
And Jeff, actually,
I'm in bed by like 11:30 usually on a Friday night. Too.
And it was a bad beat.
Once in a lifetime.
Well, look, Friday night, I was actually going to go back to the poorhouse. I went on Thursday night to poorhouse, watched all the games. And my son wanted to go there. We went to the poorhouse. It was so packed that like a 40-minute wait. So I crossed the street, went to Coastal Flats. That place is a madhouse on Fridays. Ended up at Ted's Bulletin, and just we decided to watch the games at home. And it got late, and just said, ah, come on, UVA, UMBC.
Yeah, please. 116 seed.
I told you on Tuesday that 16 seed beating a 1 seed was the hot fire this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was
I just want credit for that.
Well, it's still impossible to believe.
I didn't think it was impossible to believe, honestly.
No. Because it was close lately.
Yeah. Too many 15-2 scares.
Okay, but that's been happening for years.
Exactly. Well, that's why it's so inevitable.
When you finally tell yourself, wait a minute, a 16 seed just beat a 1 seed?
I just don't.
That's incredible.
But I'm with EB because when Princeton lost to Georgetown, wasn't that a 16-1? And they were close to beating Georgetown?
That was a while ago.
Okay, but that was in 1989 or something.
I get it, but there
are
times when it's close. Let's go to Theo real quick. I think he's a UVA guy.
All right, let me see here. Theo,
hey, fellas.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
What's up, Theo?
Hey, fellas. Yeah, I was there during when we lost to Chaminade, and this is orders of magnitude worse. We woke up the day after Chaminade. Most of us didn't even know we had been playing. Had no idea. That's a pure, true ambush. This one was a referendum on what we are. Mm-hmm. We were unanimous number one in this tournament going in. And not only is this the first 16 over a one, this is the first time a unanimous number one has lost to a 16. This is the first time the top-seeded number one lost to a 16. So we've got three firsts that will never go away in our lifetimes. And it's, I think, because Tony Bennett plays for 30 games. He doesn't coach and strategize for 36 or 37 games.
That's not true.
I find that hard to believe.
I mean, they're completely prepared as much as you can. It is a little more difficult when you don't know your opponent for but a few days before, but I promise they were prepared.
Yeah, There's no way they thought that little munchkin point guard that was going to beat them.
Yeah.
Mora.
They came out flat.
Also, you got to put it on the players, too. Players probably are more responsible than the coaching.
Yes.
You know, because players are likely to sleep on it way more than a coaching staff would.
Defensively, they were poor. I mean, look how many open threes UMBC had.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch UVA all year, they're not giving up open threes like that consistently.
Doug Gottlieb actually broke it down on social media right after the loss very well, like how UMBC systematically sort of attacked Virginia and what they did tactically.
They're also
if you're
modern
interested,
day
check
team,
out his Twitter feed.
They're not interested in posting it up. They're just shooting threes.
Yeah.
Modern day, you shoot threes. The math is on your side.
If you shoot them well.
Yeah. Scoring from the paint, it's like worth like 0.7.
Yeah.
And like shooting threes is worth like 1.7. It's just like you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
Well, true, but you still have to make the shots. I mean, Michigan State missed 29 threes yesterday. That's the reason they lost.
Right. Right. But if you get hot, you can beat anybody.
All right.
Exactly.
We'll get back to the tournament at 8:20. Jerry Palm's going to join us, bracketology expert. We're the Junkies on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.